you can meet and hear Hank Hanegraaff, Hans Feeney, Scott Klusendorf, Craig Parton, Will Wheaton, Angus Manoogian, and Jonathan Fisk at the 2018 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, June 8th and Saturday, June 9th in Collinsville, Illinois. Collinsville is 15 miles east of St. Louis. Early bird registration is $110. For more information, visit issuesetc.org. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 8th and 9th in Collinsville, Illinois.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin on this Friday afternoon, April the 20th. We're going to be talking a little bit about the latest document release. Now, documents are being released when it comes to these ongoing, and let's just call it very confusing investigation, series of investigations back and forth in Washington, D.C. I know it has something to do with Russia, or it's alleged to have something to do with Russia, and the president, and the 2016 presidential election, and the FBI director, the former FBI director, James Comey, who's just written a book and has just had seven memos that he wrote while consulting with the president released. What do they tell us and what don't they tell us? Joining us to talk about it, Molly Hemingway, a regular guest, Fox News contributor and senior editor of The Federalist, author of a recent column titled Comey's Memos Indicate Dossier Briefing of Trump Was a Setup. Molly, welcome back to Issues Etc.
It's great to be here with you.
Okay, in the simplest possible terms, because I cannot follow it, what is the left's narrative that they want us to believe about President Trump, the FBI, the dossier, and the Russians?
It can get pretty complicated, but in a word, the thing that media have been pushing for about a year and a half is that Donald Trump treasonously colluded with Russia to steal an election. And a big part of that story is built around a dossier that we now know was secretly funded by Hillary Clinton and the Democratic National Committee using Russian information to claim that Trump was compromised by Russia. Nothing in that dossier has been verified other than the public information. You know, Russia is a real country and, you know, these are the people in Trump's orbit, but not any of the claims, of the salacious claims. But it has not prevented that narrative from being widely believed by many in the media and forming a major portion of the news coverage of the first part of the presidency. And that is what it is.
So the newly released memos, I believe there are seven of them. What are they and do they do anything to support that narrative?
So James Comey, the former director of the FBI, wrote seven memos after he had conversations with the president, President Trump, I should say. He never kept memos about other presidents, but from his very first meeting with President Trump, he kept memos. That itself might indicate a form of bias that Comey has here. But what happened is James Comey briefed President-elect Trump about the dossier. The fact that that briefing happened leaked almost immediately to CNN. That really set off this Russia hysteria. The hysteria also led to Donald Trump's frustration that he was privately being told by James Comey that he was not under investigation, but publicly James Comey was giving a very strong indication that Donald Trump was under investigation. He asked him to actually say publicly what he kept saying privately. He refused to do so, or he declined to do so, I should say. That frustration, I think, played a role in his eventual firing by Donald Trump, who just felt that this guy was playing games. He was angry about being fired, he said, so he, as an act of vengeance, leaked four of these memos to a buddy who he later claimed was his attorney. That guy leaked them to the New York Times. The publication of these leaked memos, or the content in these leaked memos, led to the appointment of a special counsel who has now spent untold amounts of money digging into every possible aspect of Trump and his administration, his team, the campaign, and those memos were turned over to Congress after a very long fight with the Department of Justice, and they were leaked to the media yesterday. Those memos did contain classified information. They were leaked by Comey, so he's now under investigation for leaking classified information.
So do the memos contain anything that would support that narrative? And if not, what do they contain and what do we learn from them?
Well, the memos do not include anything that would support a Russia collusion narrative. They do support the idea that Trump did not collude with Russia. It includes him saying he didn't collude. If anyone in his orbit colluded, he'd like to know. He wants the investigation fully done to exonerate him, and he's asking why it can't be done more publicly so that everyone can know, because it's undermining people's thoughts about the legitimacy of his election. That is probably not the behavior of someone who actually is secretly controlled by Putin. And, you know, they're basically two competing narratives. Either Donald Trump is an agent of Russia who stole the election by colluding with Russia, or our intelligence chiefs behaved improperly in making this such a weaponized idea in the public's mind. The memos definitely support that later theory, this idea that intelligence chiefs behaved improperly. The very first memo, which is about him briefing Trump on the dossier, is about Comey briefing Trump on the dossier. He says that James Clapper, the director of national intelligence, was the one who wanted him to do this private briefing. He says in that first memo, CNN wants to run the story, but they're looking for a hook, like a news hook, to make it seem legitimate that they're running the story. The briefing itself became the news hook that CNN used to justify putting this dossier out into the American public. That sounds an awful lot like a setup. And if it's not a setup, I think James Comey and James Clapper have a lot of explaining to do about how it wasn't a setup, that they happened to do exactly what CNN was looking for to get this dossier out into the bloodstream of American public life. And also, there was a recent report by the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence. Their finding number 44 was that James Clapper had given extremely inconsistent testimony about talking with CNN about the dossier. And there are other reports that Clapper was one of the sources or confirming sources about the dossier. This was Barack Obama's director of national intelligence. That's an incredibly high level, incredibly damaging leak to get this information out about a dossier that even at this late date is still not verified and still does not contain information that should be used in legal proceedings or to undermine a presidency. And James Clapper, of course, is now employed by CNN.
So it sounds like, just to summarize, there is no smoking gun in these memos, but we've watched the media do this before. They hype the memos, they hype them as a smoking gun that will inevitably prove their narrative. Then when it doesn't, they say no one expected these to be the smoking gun. Has that already begun?
Well, I think there actually is a smoking gun in these memos. It's just not the one. You know, if you're looking for evidence of an elaborate conspiracy involving Trump and Russia, you're not going to find it, because I don't believe it exists. At least there's been no evidence to support that at this late date. If you're looking for evidence that intelligence chiefs behaved incredibly improperly, there are smoking guns in these memos. Just an elaborate plan that's openly talked about to brief the president about how the media are interested, about how they're looking for a news hook, that this briefing happened. Oh, one of the things that's interesting in that first memo is that Comey flat out says that he declined to tell the president who was behind the dossier. We now know, of course, that was Hillary Clinton and the Democratic National Committee who secretly funded this using Russian sources. And Trump asked him, and he didn't tell him. And he puts that in the memo, that he didn't tell him who was behind the dossier. Of course, if Trump had been told that, he would have known immediately what was going on. These are the types of smoking guns that are in these memos, but because they're not what the media have been pushing for a year and a half, they will be downplayed, ignored, or ridiculed because it doesn't match their narrative.
How does this dovetail or fail to dovetail with Comey's recent release of his book?
Well, I mean, all news is good news when you're on a book tour, so I'm sure he's happy that the memos are out. He's probably less happy that he's facing investigation for leaking classified information, which is a felony, and that's also related to these memos coming out. But in general, James Comey presents himself as Washington, D.C.'s last honest man. That has taken a hit this week as he's given weird answers to questions such as why he didn't tell Donald Trump who was behind the dossier. He begins and ends each of his memos with claims of people praising him for his integrity. He really likes to talk about how people love him in these memos. That kind of matches with the tenor of the book as well, where he wanted to write a book on leadership. I don't know if it's going as well as he had hoped for. You know, I don't think he's viewed as someone who's a good leader, in part because so much of what he put in his book was petty or personal. And it's totally understandable that you would dislike the person who fired you, and understandable that the person who fired you probably didn't like what you were doing to him as well. These are understandable things, but they don't show people who are above the fray or apolitical, which I think James Comey had hoped to portray himself as.
Where does all of this stand now? You mentioned Comey now will be under investigation in his own right. Where does the Mueller investigation stand? Is there any timeline, any finish line in sight? Where do we stand today?
The Mueller investigation has no limits, and it has no indication that it's wrapping up. And it has moved from a Russia collusion narrative to an obstruction of justice situation to then spinning off into other bureaus' investigations into Trump's attorney. This is completely unbounded, and it also has unlimited funding. And I think that there is a much deeper issue here, which is we have bureaucracies that are very powerful, and they do not want to have threats to their power. And James Comey was the director of the FBI for 12 years. His agency is the one that's under the gun in this larger battle that we're facing about whether the FBI can be trusted to handle cases impartially. And there's a track record from his time at FBI that is not terribly good, whether it was his botching of the anthrax investigation or his political leniency for Democrats versus his lack of leniency for Republicans. And his reputation is sort of on the line here in this investigation as well, by which I mean the FBI is being viewed as lacking credibility. And you're seeing that even in recent cases that they've lost, whether it was the Pulse nightclub case or the Clive and Bundy case. They're being routinely condemned by judges for playing games with evidence and with information. There are a lot of bigger issues in play here, and I don't think Mueller has the incentive to wrap things up. I think he has the incentive to protect the FBI and other institutions, and it will be very interesting to see what happens. But having said that, who knows? He might be the most honorable in this particular situation. He might be doing a good job investigating actual Russian election interference as opposed to trying to bring down Donald Trump. The behavior against Trump's personal attorney should be concerning to everyone, regardless of their feelings of Donald Trump, that a powerful federal government can go after someone's attorney, risking attorney-client communications, or just the political persecution that seems to be in play here is something that should concern all Americans, regardless of how they view Donald Trump and his administration.
Molly Hemingway is our guest. She's a Fox News contributor. We're talking about recently released memos written by former FBI Director James Comey. When we come back, how does she respond to a comparison between the Mueller investigation and the Ken Starr investigation of decades ago?
It is often misunderstood as sort of a to-do list for women.
Deaconess Elizabeth Ullman, author of The Issues, Etc., Book of the Month, Demystifying the Proverbs 31 Woman.
Or something that we have to strive to be, and it's very often pulled out of its moorings. It's pulled out of its context and not really put into the context of the rest of the Book of Proverbs.
Learn more about demystifying the Proverbs 31 woman at issuesetc.org.
Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran Learning. Issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.
Throughout the 50 days of Easter, sacred music for the world. LutheranPublicRadio.org. Listen 24/7 to Sacred Music for the Easter Season. LPR, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Many Lutheran pastors outside of the U.S. receive little or no seminary education. Luther Academy provides theological triage through conferences, books, and journals. Help support Luther Academy by making a tax-deductible donation at lutheracademy.com or call 260-452-2211. Serving Lutheran pastors to the ends of the earth, Luther Academy, 260-452-2211 or lutheracademy.com.
Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
You could win an audio DVD of every presentation from all six Issues Etc. Making the Case conferences. Record your answer to the question, Issues Etc., What Does This Mean? On our comment line, 618-223-8382. If we play your answer during Issues Etc., we'll send you a conference audio DVD of almost 50 hours of teaching. 618-223-8382 and answer the question, Issues Etc., What Does This Mean? Please be sure to mention where you listen.
Oh Lord, open my lips.
Listen to chapel services live, weekday mornings from Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Morning Chapel from Kramer Chapel. Live weekday mornings at 9 Central, 10 Eastern, 8 Mountain, and 7 Pacific at issuesetc.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking with Molly Hemingway of Fox News about recently released memos written by former FBI Director James Comey. Molly, before the break, you were talking about the Mueller investigation kind of without any limits, without any boundaries set around it. How do you respond to a comparison with the Ken Starr investigation during the Clinton administration that began with the suicide of a staffer and financial deals in Arkansas, but ended with Monica Lewinsky, a perjury charge, and impeachment charges? How do you respond to that comparison?
Oh, it's not just that one. If you look at almost every special counsel, they go completely afield of what their original charge was. In this case, there weren't very few limits placed on Mueller to begin with, which makes it even more extreme what you're seeing. But I think people should think about whether special counsels are good ways to find justice or whether they are good ways to go after political enemies. And that's a challenging question for both Democrats and Republicans. I think also of the Patrick Fitzgerald special counsel, which was supposed to find out who leaked Valerie Plame's name to the media. It was actually known at the time that the special counsel started. The special counsel himself knew who leaked it. He never charged the person who leaked it. He instead went after other people in his search to bring down Vice President Cheney. This is not a healthy way for a healthy republic to operate. And if people care about self-government and don't want to be a banana republic and don't want to have some of these more like Russia-like ways of targeting political enemies, I think they should reconsider whether a special counsel is the way to go. Having said that, if you are going to have special counsels, I think we are far past the time of needing a special counsel to look into abuses by the FBI, Department of Justice, and other agencies related to the civil rights of people, frankly, related to the Trump campaign.
What evidence will it take for the left to change its narrative on Donald Trump and Russian collusion?
Well, ideally, you should seek evidence before you determine that someone has committed treason. And since that wasn't part of the arrangement here, I think people began with a deeply held belief that Donald Trump could not have possibly won this election fair and square, and that it had to be some horrible conspiracy, such as Russian interference. They began to believe this, and they deeply believe this without benefit of evidence. So the idea that evidence would exonerate Trump or that it would convince people out of a view that they didn't use evidence to get into is probably unrealistic. But in general, everybody, left and right, should wait for evidence before they charge someone before they, you know, come to this determination that someone is guilty of something. And that's been disappointing to see how few people in elite circles have waited for evidence, particularly now that we have a rather dramatic lack of evidence for the claim that Donald Trump is a traitor who colluded with Russia to steal an election.
How much of this is the press simply trying to explain how wrong it was at election time?
I think it would be hard to say that this is not a continuation of bad coverage of 2016. There were ways to respond to the dramatic journalistic failure of 2016, where very few people in the media had a sense of what was happening in their country that they claimed to cover. That would have been true, by the way, even if Donald Trump had lost. The failure would have been true even if Hillary Clinton had won, and even if she'd won by large margins. The media did a very bad job of covering that campaign, and they do a very bad job of understanding the American people they claim to understand. After those failures, they should have apologized genuinely, committed to reporting facts instead of pushing narratives, and making systematic changes so that newsrooms wouldn't be filled with just one type of person with one type of perspective. Instead, they felt, I think, deeply hurt and embarrassed by their failure and couldn't accept that it was a failure, so they sought other answers. And you saw that with their immediate push of a fake news claim that fake news led to Donald Trump's victory. And then, thanks to the help of this Hillary Clinton campaign effort of Russia, 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 they latched onto that, and that was aided by a tremendous number of selective leaks by intelligence community professionals. And they are not only not backing down, they're winning awards for this. The Pulitzer Prize Committee awarded the New York Times and Washington Post National Reporting Pulitzers for their coverage of possible ties between Trump and Russia, never mind that they don't actually exist or that the entire narrative has been false. They're giving each other awards, and I don't think that many people in the media realize how destructive this is, that people don't believe what they're saying anymore. They're just getting more extreme. That is very bad for civil discourse.
What will it take for us, for the nation, to get closure on this story?
I was just thinking about how it's interesting that the best thing that the FBI and Department of Justice could do right now is actually prosecute Andrew McCabe, the number two who was fired for lying about his leaks to the media, as well as former FBI Director James Comey, who leaked classified information. When they see two standards of justice, one where you might not have even done anything wrong, such as Mike Flynn, who, when he was interviewed by FBI agents, those agents said that they didn't believe he had actually lied, later pleading guilty to lying to the FBI because he's facing the special counsel and all of his resources. You see that standard where you can't even have a slight deviation and the full force of the law is on you versus powerful people routinely getting away with stuff. So if the FBI wants to have credibility in the future, it needs to do a thorough examination of its major politicization and problems with leaking, as well as just the abuse of prosecutorial discretion that you're seeing at the Department of Justice, where certain people get to walk away even though they commit crimes, and other people are strung up and put in prison for things that, you know, if you're an FBI agent, you get away with. That is not good, and people do not like two standards of law. We need one standard, and it's incumbent upon the Department of Justice to really root out this corruption for the sake of, you know, everyone needs a strong FBI that can prosecute, that can investigate crimes, and a Department of Justice that can prosecute these things. We don't have that right now.
Molly Hemingway is a Fox News contributor. She's senior editor of The Federalist and author of a recent column titled Comey's Memos Indicate Dossier Briefing of Trump Was a Setup. You can read it at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Thanks, Molly.
Thank you.
On the other side of the break on this Friday afternoon, it's This Week in Pop American Christianity. Pastor Chris Roseborough will bring us some examples of evangelicals blatantly denying the bodily resurrection of Jesus. Stay tuned.
What does Easter have to do with mission work? Find out in the April issue of the Lutheran Witness magazine, as you learn to see Christian missions through the lens of Easter and see Easter anew through the eyes of LCMS missionaries around the world. Celebrate Jesus' death and resurrection together with all the saints throughout time and to the very ends of the earth. Visit cph.org/witness to subscribe today. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran Christian perspective.
Are you a high schooler who enjoys theology? Do you know a high schooler who would make a good pastor or deaconess? Every summer, Concordia Theological Seminary offers programs for vocational discernment and theological education for high school students. Check out Christ Academy and Phoebe Academy this summer, June 17th through the 30th. Registrations open now. Email us at christacademy@ctsfw.edu or register online. Christ Academy at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, June 17th through the 30th.
We're supported by listeners like you. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Resurrection Lutheran, Detroit, Michigan. Bethlehem Lutheran, Parma, Ohio. St. Paul's Lutheran, Lockport, Illinois. Faith Lutheran, Columbus, Indiana. Glory of Christ Lutheran, Plymouth, Minnesota. Good Shepherd Lutheran, Arnold, Missouri. Peace Lutheran, Sussex, Wisconsin. Our Redeemer Lutheran, Cedar Falls, Iowa. Zion Lutheran, Moberly, Missouri. And Elm Grove Lutheran, Elm Grove, Wisconsin. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, and click support. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll advertise your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. Issuesetc.org, click support. The Issues Etc. 300.